Hello, and welcome to Holden Village. Today's date is Tuesday, August 26, 2003. Today's session is entitled Defending a Worldview Through Primetime Television. Session 2 of Reading TV for Social and Theological Meaning, presented by Chris Voss Rothmeyer, number VOK 2003-07. Let's listen in.
Chris Voss Rothmeyer. I am a pastor in Portland, in the south of Portland, Milwaukee. And this is the series called, a little different than what's put on the board here, but same general idea, Reading Television for Theological and Cultural Meaning. So what we're going to be doing this whole week is looking at various forms of television. Primetime TV is our focus. Yesterday we talked about myth, using John Dominic Crossan's categorizations of television. There are five. And yesterday we talked about myth, those shows that are world building, that build an understanding of our world. Today we are going to use, we're going to talk about apologue, from the Greek apologue, which means a defense. So what we're going to be talking about today are shows, genres of television that defend a particular worldview. Yesterday we talked about a particular show, Star Trek, which builds up a worldview which may not have existed before. Today we're going to talk about shows that capitalize on current assumptions and knowledge that people have about culture and society and reinforce them. Tomorrow we're going to talk about the category called action. Maybe no surprise to you that the show that we're focusing on tomorrow is ER. And then Thursday we'll look at The Simpsons as an example of satirical television. And then on Friday we'll look at the rarest form of TV, the parable, which is the exact opposite of myth. It's the one that tears down world understanding, that breaks apart our understanding of the world. A lot of the information that I'll be using for the rest of the week, not yesterday because it's not reviewed in this book, but this is available in the bookstore. It's called Watching What We Watch. It's written by a series of people, largely edited by Walt Davis, a teacher at my seminary down in San Francisco. And he has written with several other people a book that takes a look at different shows and analyzes them. He looks at nightly news, both on a national level and on a local level. Today we're going to look at local TV network news programming as an example of apologue, apology, defense of a particular worldview. But before I go any further, why don't I just ask you, what news shows do you watch and why?
The Lehrer Report.
McNeil Lehrer. Oh, no, it's not McNeil anymore, I guess.
Because it seems to have, seems to me to have an appropriate balance point of view. Mm-hmm. Maybe one aligned with my point of view. Many things.
Okay, very good. Anybody else watch network news?
Network, I watch CBS, Dan Rather.
Dan Rather.
Our local, well, we get a satellite of WCCO in Minneapolis.
Okay.
So that's kind of as close to the local news. Although in our little town of Bemidji, we have a public TV and local news, which I don't watch it very often.
Okay, so you watch Dan Rather on the national news.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else?
I do too.
Also?
Well, I watch Tom Brokaw.
I watch Dan Rather because that segment of news goes the longest.
Oh.
It has half an hour local, half an hour national, half an hour local, half an hour national. And that's why I watch it. Okay. I mean, they could have Mickey Mouse, but I have the one that goes the longest.
Okay. Fascinating. And why do you watch NBC with Tom Brokaw?
I mean, no particular reason, I guess.
Uh-huh. I don't watch much local news. I watch national, and usually I'll put on CNN or CNN headline news because I don't want to be required to turn the TV on at a particular time. And, you know, it's what is going on. You know, if I've got 10 or 15 minutes, let me find out and turn it off.
Okay.
So it's unfortunately it's not filtered, but or it's highly filtered by them, by the presenters, but it's just an information feed.
I guess I listen mostly to public radio because I'm driving around a lot, and public radio news, which gives an interesting variety of stuff.
Listen to NPR?
Yeah.
I'm a real news junkie. In fact, many, many, many years ago, before I had children, I actually was a news reporter. And then I gave that up and had a career being a mother, which is fine. But I'm a real news junkie, and I've got to tell you, it's driving me nuts to be up here and not have NPR. When I'm awakening in the morning, I want to turn the radio on, and I'm having a real hard time with that. But having said that, I do listen a lot to NPR, and I read my local newspaper, the Seattle Times, cover to cover. However, I almost never watch television news. Mostly, not because there isn't some value in that, but it comes on during dinner. I cannot take that time of the evening to deal with TV. I do have a job that I have to get up real early in the morning, so I can't stay up to watch the 11 o'clock news. So I really don't watch it very much at all. Although as I was mentioning earlier, I will tell you all, my husband happens to be a news photographer for our local ABC affiliate in Seattle. And if he's not home for dinner by 5 o'clock, I often will tune in just to see where he is. And in so doing, I catch some of the local news. But that's not usually what I watch. I don't find local news to be really valuable.
How many of you don't bother to watch the network news at all? You just do not watch it. Okay, so some of you, actually, most of you, all but two or three people, watch some kind of television or radio news.
I listen to a non-commercial public radio where you have BBC News. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a different view.
Okay.
Kind of looking back at America from Europe.
So you get shortwave radio.
No, there's a listener-supported non-commercial radio station in the Seattle area, Everett area.
And it picks up BBC News.
Mm-hmm. I sometimes watch Fox News to see how far off I think they are.
I admit to that, too.
Although
I do it on a web page, Fox web page, through my computer at work.
Oh, right, so you can do that now, too. A lot of people are listening.
I think I got into doing that because they had a really up-to-date coverage on the Gulf War.
Yeah.
That's when it was 9/11, I think. But their popularity has increased quite a bit since 9/11.
Yes.
But I don't agree with a lot of the way that the news is shown in that.
Well, let's get into the news and what it's portraying. But just a couple statistics before we launch here into this clip from a local news network. Newspaper readership, this is a book I'm reading out of called Bowling Alone by Robert Putnam, who is, let me see now, he is the Peter and Isabel Malkin Professor of Public Policy at Harvard University. National bestseller book, available in the bookstore. We should probably not be altogether surprised that newspaper readership has been plunging in recent decades. He makes that point before, and that there's a correlation between newspaper readership and lack of civic involvement, engagement. There's no causality necessarily in it, but he says there's a correlation between the two. In 1948, when the median American adult had 9 years of formal schooling, newspaper circulation was 1.3 papers per household. That is to say that each house had more than one newspaper per household. Let's see, 50 years later, so we're talking 1998, schooling had risen by 50%. So an average schooling of 13 years of formal education. But newspaper leadership had fallen by 57% despite the fact that newspaper reading is highly correlated with education. he specifically talks about trends in civic engagement, and newspaper reading is highly correlated to civic engagement. Television network news watching is also very highly correlated to civic engagement, less so than newspaper reading, but more so than not being connected with the news at all. So there's a gradation in terms of who's engaged in civic life.
How is he defining civic engagement?
Oh, involvement in PTA, in local clubs like Kiwanis, or involved in the neighborhood associations, that kind of thing. Or people who write to their senators, civic engagement on a broad level. And here's another statistic. Like news readership, news viewership is on the decline. As we would predict, in recent years, the fall off in the audience for network news has been even faster than the decline in newspaper circulation. The regular audience for nightly network news plunged from 60% of adults in 93 to 38% in 1998. That's a major dive in just 5 years, given the length of how long network news has been on. And the audience for network news is aging rapidly, as one might easily guess from health aid advertising that supports Tom Brokaw, Peter Jennings, and Dan Rather. Note the advertisings when you watch those shows. According to a 1997 study by NBC News, while the average age of audience for all primetime programs was 42, the average age of the audience for nightly newscasts was 57. So you're about to watch a show that the average age of people who watch it are 57 years old. So let's actually just watch this clip. And what I'm going to show is, again, the opening scene and one particular story. Don't have enough time to show a whole half an hour or 24 or 25 minutes of news. So we're just actually going to look at it. And again, from yesterday, I passed out a sheet that I'm not sure if that's practical this time, but we're going to look at certain aspects through different lenses: the narrative lens, the function lens, signs and meanings, structure, and that kind of thing. So let's look at this, and then we'll talk about it. Thank you for grabbing the lights. Volume. Sorry, let me get the volume down. This is the end of yesterday.
How often does your very...
And the Blazers come down hard. Also, the latest on a possible sale.
The news is next.
This is the introduction.
More troubles for the Blazers. David Stoudemire cited yet again for drug possession, and the new team president wastes no time letting the city know there will be changes ahead.
This conduct is detrimental to the image and detrimental to the franchise as a whole.
Good evening, Joe Donovan is off tonight. David Stoudemire faces a hefty penalty and a suspension, and it's our top story at 11. We have live team coverage. Sports director Colin Coward has reactions from the team president. When we begin with new channel 8's Nicole Dow live in the Rose Garden with details of Stoudemire's arrest. Nicole?
Well, Joe, Stoudemire, Arizona Tuesday, was caught with a bag of marijuana at the Tucson airport. He now faces misdemeanor charges and a very troubled future with the Blazers.
Okay.
Back in the spotlight, David Stoudemire's latest brush with the law has tongues wagging and tempers flaring. At a press conference Monday, Blazers management visibly fed up. Stoudemire's third drug charge, a glaring contrast to the reformed image his team wants. Arizona police say on Thursday, screeners at Tucson Airport caught the Blazers guard with a bag of marijuana wrapped in foil as he tried to pass through security.
Somewhere during that event is when they discovered the substance.
Discovered believe they have about an ounce and a half of marijuana. Sotomayor, no stranger to drug charges, in May of 2002, police say while responding to a burglar alarm at Sotomayor's house, they found a pound of pot. A judge found the search illegal. In November, Sotomayor and fellow blazer Rasheed Wallace busted for pot possession during a traffic stop on I-5. Sotomayor had a deal for that with prosecutors, probation. Prosecutors say now could possibly be revoked. Could sentence him anywhere from one day to 90 days. As for the court of public opinion, Sotomayor may have fouled out for good.
I like David and the fact that he's from Portland. Well, he kind of ran out of his,
That's why he didn't get caught, man.
Yeah, that's a bummer, too.
Again, Sotomayor faces misdemeanor charges in Arizona. He was cited and released. He's set to be in court on July 25th. Neither Sotomayor nor any of his representatives was available for comment about this latest charge. Joe, back to you.
Nicole Dow, thank you very much. This is the latest chapter in a season full of turmoil and trouble. This season alone, different players were arrested three times for marijuana possession, arrested for felony domestic assault. Those charges were later dropped. Suspended and fined for on-court fighting. Suspended and fined for spitting on an opponent. Suspended and fined for threatening a referee after a game. Suspended and fined for fighting during practice. And the Blazers' new president, Steve Patterson, says this kind of behavior will not be tolerated. Patterson held a news conference at the Rose Garden today. You saw a bit of that there in Nicole's report. The sports director, Colin Cowherd, joins us now with more on that. Colin?
Joe, Patterson said if he could terminate Damon's contract today, he would. He was candid and succinct as he and the organization levied a fine against Damon that's the highest ever for any single player by an NBA team. Now, the players' union will fight the fine, but I'm told so will Patterson, who said Damon's third incident with marijuana undermines everything this organization is trying to do.
With that in mind, in view of the damage that this does to the community and to the franchise as a whole, we're hereby fining Damon Stoudemire $250,000. He will be immediately suspended from the team until there's a satisfactory resolution to these matters.
And at the end of this press conference, Patterson was asked if he's considering trading Stoudemire. His answer, give me an offer, Joe.
Colin, thank you very much. There's another athlete in trouble as well, and I'm Los Angeles Laker Kobe Bryant. The NBA star is accused of sexual misconduct. The prosecutors in Colorado say it could be days before they actually make a decision on whether to file charges against Bryant. He turned himself in to police today, or rather Friday, after a woman accused him of misconduct at an upscale lodge and spa near Vail. The woman has not been identified. Bryant's attorney says he is innocent. It was a tense fourth.
Okay. Yes, if you would please turn the lights back on again. We may get a chance to watch this episode again, but let's go back to the introductory section. What did you notice about that brief introduction?
You mean before the story started?
Before the story even started, how did that all get pieced together? News Channel 8.
Well, the best in the Northwest, wasn't it?
Let's see. Did they say best in the Northwest? I think the words were from KGW, where the news comes first. This is Northwest News Channel 8 at 11.
Well, it took all three newscasters to do the story, so okay. It must be very, very important.
Mm-hmm. We have about 24, 23 and a half minutes, and this news show, this program, took up 10 minutes of that, the conflict between the manager and Stoudemire. So one-third of the whole news program is taken up by this.
Slow news day.
Man, really. Now, I taped this in mid-July, and this was the news story of the week. The way news is set up is that the producers come up with a news story to track every week. It's just like, this week we're going to talk about this subject, and this week we're going to talk about this subject. It begins on Monday and, quote-unquote, ends on Friday, not necessarily with any resolution, but at least you know more about the subject. And then the next week, you've got another storyline. And the next week, it just revolves from week to week to week. Let me just kind of go over what you saw. It opens up with those eights overlay, you know, lots of eights, Channel 8. It's Channel 8 News. It's an NBC affiliate. Then a window opens revealing helicopters, a helicopter hovering over the city and seeing all. A voice says from KGW, where the news comes first, this is Northwest News, Channel 8 at 11. Then followed by the NBC bells, dum, dum, dum. So you know it's an NBC affiliate, calling attention to the time and the program we're about to watch. It's impossible to focus on all the eights, kind of zooming in and out and the letters and all that. It's chaotic. It draws us into it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
It bothers me when they do all that stuff like this.
Uh-huh. It's chaotic, and that's going to come up a little later.
You can't focus on it.
You cannot focus on it. The idea is to have all of this, we're going to make sense out of all of this chaos somehow. It's a prelude to what is going to happen next. The news is going to try to make sense of all the chaos. And this is the top news story, so they're going to start with a story that is chaotic. And invariably, it's a story that is about some conflict situation. It's the narrative of our time, and just a little bit about the history of news. This book contends that between the 16th century and the 19th century, the template was to talk about like world, what was happening in the world at that time. There was countries that were being formed. There were, let's see, I can find it in here. Okay. Colonization, empire, nation building, and manifest destiny. News, probably out of newspapers, focused on those things as things to congeal news stories around. The news that mattered was the news that bolstered the idea of colonization, empire, nation building, and manifest destiny. After World War II, the Cold War provided the pattern for news programs. So news between, say, World War II and not too long ago, bolstered the concept that there was a Western part of the world and there was the communist world. After 89 and the fall of the Berlin Wall, international news coverage has declined by almost one-third. We're talking 1989 to 2001 when this book was published. So in about a period of 10 years, international news, the news program that you watch for half an hour of local news or national news and then some international news notwithstanding, generally speaking, international news has declined by one-third after the fall of the Berlin Wall. And now the template is wealthy nations and poor nations. And even so, the wealthy nations are the ones that restore order, and the poor nations are the ones that are chaotic. And it plays out in the local news as well. You've got order and chaos. That's the paradigm that's used to frame what shows are being reported on. Order and chaos. And we'll look at dynamics of how order and chaos is, maybe I'll ask that question now. How do you see order and chaos playing itself out in this particular news segment?
I think it plays itself out in the saddest and most tragic of ways, that you've got these basketball players. Well, first of all, this is a news story that is basically gossip. It's, you know, it's the kind of stuff that people are going to talk about the next day. And that's why they're having it be their top story of the day, because that's what local news tries to do. They want to capture what people are talking about around the water cooler. It's so sad to watch this one, because you've got these two African-American, highly paid celebrity basketball players who are messing up. They're making big mistakes. And you got this white guy who comes in to save the day by saying, I'd fire him if I could. And we're all there going, yeah, you should do that. Get rid of these guys.
So who's
pointing? And the other thing, too, is that we love to see celebrities fall. Mm-hmm. You know, there's that whole aspect as well.
The other part of it is, if it would have been someone, just Joe Public, going through the airport, it would not make the local news. Mm-hmm. At all. It happens every day.
Because it isn't news.
Because, well, It's not news. And because of who the person is, not necessarily what they do. And as you said, it's totally impossible.
Well, and it may have happened, we don't know about it, but it may have happened that, say, the vice president, I have no idea of any of this, so please don't take this as news. But say the vice president of Intel, also a Portland corporation, walks through an airport, he gets busted. Do we see that on the news? Why do we see...
Oh, you would.
You might.
Oh, absolutely.
Perhaps because...
He's the vice president of Intel.
Well, no, because of the data dynamic. And maybe that's what's going on here. And by that, I mean, you couldn't keep it under wraps. David slept with Bathsheba, and people know about it, and you couldn't keep it under wraps. So for the sake of the reporters and their personal sense of integrity and what they do, they have to report on this story. It's public already, and you've got to report on it. Let me ask you this question also, because contention of the book. News is a combination of three dynamics: what the audience wants, what the corporations who own the networks want, and what the reporters need to do to maintain their own personal sense of integrity as reporters. Those three dynamics are going on according to these authors on News Network. And one way of analyzing nightly news is to find out which strand is playing itself out. Is our reporters trying to maintain their personal sense of integrity and making sure this news network gets out? What news is being shown and what isn't? Is that a dynamic of the corporate people who own these conglomerates, actually, several different news, not only newspapers, but local news networks, and sometimes radio and internet media as well, is what's being shown what they want you to know and what you don't want to know, and is what is being shown what the audience wants to know. Sometimes all three of those things are playing themselves out. Maybe one in particular shines more. What do you think is happening in this show?
I think they sat around at the morning meeting and said, this is what the audience wants. I think that's what they thought first and foremost. This is what the audience wants. And they had to do this story because the other stations were going to do it, and they're all vying for the same ratings. But what I think is interesting there, you had who mentioned that there were three different reporters. There were three different reporters on this story. Could have easily been done by one. And the one that was completely useless was the blonde standing out there doing a live shot in the pitch black when there's nothing to see. Why was she standing out there at 11 o'clock at night? There was no reason for it, except she was a pretty blonde, and by standing there being live, it gave this sense of immediacy, like, we're on top of it, we're right here, we're giving it to you right now as it's happening. Well, the fact is, it had happened days before, or that day, or earlier in the day. So that's just a gimmick, really.
Yeah, but they all do that. It's an image.
They all do it.
It's an image thing.
They all do it, and it drives them nuts.
Yeah.
That girl was not happy standing out there. I can tell you that right now. She would rather have been home with her kids.
Yeah.
It was no reason for her to be out there, except that she's a pretty blonde, and that is the function of not necessarily what the audience wants, but what the corporation thinks the audience wants. And that's why she was standing out there.
Okay. That also brings up another point that I want to raise. Producers, kind of their maxim is no picture, no story, at least for network news. Your husband is the picture. If he's got a good picture, you can create a story behind it. And in that sense, this is a dramatic art form. And we can all moan about the fact that news is not news anymore, it's really entertainment, but there's actually a reason for that. In fact, let me just indicate to you that in 1915, the Supreme Court declared the film industry to be a business pure and simple, originated and conducted for profit. The Communication Act of 1994 applied a similar commercial definition to the electronic media. And then, an interesting thing happened in the 1980s. Before the 1980s, network news was not a money-making venture. It was aired, but it lost money, actually. And it only was aired because, of course, people wanted to see the news, news junkies and all the rest of us included, But it made its, it stayed on because of the earnings that were made by the entertainment industry. But in the early 80s, conglomerates started to buy up a lot of these local media outlets, from radio, internet didn't exist at the time yet, to newspapers, to local network television. So they were starting to be bought up by different conglomerates. And then in 1987, the government deregulated the industry. Key date to keep in mind. After 1987, the rules of the game changed. Previously, private owners had not expected their news departments to show a profit. News and news shows were highly subsidized by the profits generated by programs designed for entertainment. So now you've got people starting to be interested in, oh, and it began with 60 Minutes, actually, in the late 1960s, which when it first came out, it was a news magazine. It was thought to be kind of a muckraking news magazine, sensationalist, but it made money. It was the first one. It was kind of one of these first news programs that ever made money. It was the only one that did for a while until the early 80s. But when news shows started to make money, producers thought, oh, now we can use this as a medium for making money. And they also compete with the entertainment industry. So you've got corporations, first of all, who operate by the bottom line, so that their economic incentive switched from money making to money maximizing. As news shows, so the news that's shown is in an effort, and the way it's shown is in an effort to maximize the profits of those who own particular programs and particular media conglomerates. So you can moan about the fact that news is not news anymore, but news is now competing with entertainment, with the entertainment industry. So what you've got on here is you've got this pretty blonde. Okay, it's part of the hype. It's part of the lipstick and rouge, if you will. But it has to, according to the owners, because they need to compete with the rest of the entertainment industry. Yeah.
What about the, one of the things I've always watched, especially, like our Minneapolis station, for example, most of the news is what I would classify very generally bad news. There's very little good news. And the good news is some little segment at the very end of the news show where three ducks walked across the road and somebody stopped the car so they didn't get run over. It's some little thing like that. But I've often wondered, where are they getting the input to set up a ratio like that of good news versus bad news?
Let me tell you what's happening in the rest of this news program. We've got this 10 minutes of the highlighted story. The conflict template is chaos versus order. So you've got these two. You've got the good guys and the bad guys, the evil and the good.
Let me just... This wasn't in the sports section of the program at all. It was just that they had
story. No, they got the
top story.
Right. So let me tell you what the rest of the 4 and a half minutes of commercials, 24 and a half minutes, 5 and a half minutes, I'm sorry, is devoted to this. There are two 40-second sequences, one on new school board members and the fact that Buddy Ebsen died. Three one-minute segments are all human interest stories. Mars rover was launched, the Iranian twins were separated, they hadn't died yet the next day, and there's a woman who lives in Portland in a shoe. Okay. One story at 1.5 minutes, a natural disaster, fire. Two stories at 2.5 minutes each, and both of them are stories of victims of the disaster, both hikers in the area. One story at 3 minutes, which is music, arguably human interest, music in a Japanese garden in downtown Portland. And then for 7 minutes, you've got weather for 4 minutes and sports for 3 minutes. And then you've got this 10-minute section of the conflict between Stoudemire and the managers. All right, let me just ask you, getting back to Stoudemire, Damon Stoudemire, how is he portrayed?
Kind of a dip.
Dumb.
Punk? A dip? Sorry?
Dumb.
Does he say anything?
No, I was going to say, he hasn't been interviewed or...
He's silent.
Hasn't even been asked for comment.
you know, didn't even say, you know, decline comment or something like that.
Mm-hmm. He's portrayed as a child, really.
A child.
Mm-hmm. In need of some, with a parent who's very exasperated and has decided he's going to drown him.
But he's exasperated because it's in the news, not because they found him with a bag of marijuana and misdemeanor.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, he's embarrassed because this is a news story.
And he even said this is bad for the image of the team. Yes.
Image. Yesterday we talked about signs and messages. Signs being those things that you can visually see or things that you can touch, hear, taste, smell, and whatever the other sense is. But looking at the news story, how was Damon Stoudamire portrayed visually? How is he portrayed? You've got, he's usually in scrubs and sweats or something like that. His house, well, you remember his house? How was that portrayed?
Expensive cars.
Porsche in the parking lot driveway.
And the Land Rover.
Land Rover. If you know Portland, you know he probably lives in Southwest in the hills someplace, which is a very wealthy area. Most of the Blazers live in that area. Brick, very unusual type of architecture in Portland. Probably very expensive. How about his face, his facial expressions?
Well, he was kind of smug and arrogant.
Yeah.
That's what they showed.
Mm-hmm. But there were some still pictures of him, too.
Yes.
Where it was just like a mug shot. Mm-hmm.
So what do those signs convey? What are the messages behind those signs? And you've already said them. He's kind of a punk. He's kind of this rich kid, or this. He's kind of this wealthy sports figure, and we love to knock down wealthy playboys and sports figures and those kinds of things because they offend us. We don't like the fact that they make millions and millions of dollars, much more than their managers. But they just, when they mess up, we just pound them into the ground.
Well, hold on, didn't this guy commit a rape?
Okay, that's Kobe Bryant.
We're talking about the guy.
Right. I'm not condoning what they did. Obviously, marijuana is bad, and I want everybody to know that. And also,
this is just for marijuana?
This is just for marijuana. It's the third charge that he's been caught in.
There were two different people in the story.
Two.
One was this Stoudamire, and then the other one was that Kobe Bryant, who just coincidentally had happened to mess up on about the same day.
Well, but they did show it. I mean, they could have shown a lot of things, but they wanted to pair the two basketball sports kinds of things together, and the two people who were involved. Whether the fact that they were both black, I don't know.
Well, what about those other five or six that they showed the squares about?
Yes, there were several other incidents that happened. I don't know what their racial makeup is. I have to be honest.
I think the one thing that, in terms of, we love to knock down, especially the sports figures, they make very large amounts of money, and they are not expected to hold to a standard that most of the rest of the population now, in terms of random drug testing and things like that, for almost every job they have to adhere to. So there is the vindication of the double standard almost. You know, because I mean, that's one of the, you know, the type of behavior, the first one, I would not only lose my job, I would not be hireable in my industry. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's something along the lines of, yeah, if the union gets you off on that, that's wrong. Mm-hmm. And so there is, in some ways, I think they're also preying on the fact that, you know, there is a huge double standard between different industries and things like that.
Fascinating dynamic.
I think it'd be interesting to see, I'm sure there's more than one TV station in Portland, how different stations handle the same, and I would imagine you'd find some consistency in what they show and what they don't show.
I would be willing to guess that it was almost identical.
Really?
I would be willing to guess that.
It wasn't on one of the stations.
I'm sure it was the lead story on all of the three major stations. I'm sure of that. And I would be willing to guess that each of them had the same sort of trio of reporters, the sports guy, the pretty blonde, and the anchor, and that they treated it in much the same way.
It's an experiment. Go home and try that.
Is there any underlying kind of a thought here that there's a large segment of our population that doesn't see marijuana as that big a deal? And so that is another controversy that adds to the whole thing, and they're wondering about that at the same time. So they touch those people also.
Mm. Now, okay, let's get to the man on the street interview with the people in the basketball court. There was the African-American man, and then there was a Caucasian man. I think that was very intentional to do that way as well. I can almost tell you where that basketball court was. And what were their opinions? The court of public opinion.
Split 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but boy, he's a good basketball player.
Yeah, he's a homeboy.
And he's tall.
Yeah. But the African-American man said he spent all of his chips.
Mm-hmm. Enough is enough.
Enough is enough. So we have the sense that the people on the street are not necessarily in favor of this. At least that's the viewpoint that's being presented to us. So, okay, let's talk about the man.
They can do a lot of interviews and pick the ones they want.
Indeed. And that goes to trust. Do we trust our local stations? Do we trust that they went out and did a lot of interviews and that in fact the man on the street opinion was approximately 50-50 and that's what they showed us, one example of each? I'm not sure that I trust that.
And that lack of trust has been growing over time. We used to trust our blue news anchors, those of you who watched Walter Cronkite every night. He was just like everybody's grandpa, or everybody trusted him. Who did not trust Walter Cronkite? Especially when he's crying, looking at somebody walking on the news. He's just like this person that everybody loves.
And he closed every newscast saying, and that's the way it was.
Right. Mm-hmm. So let's actually think about, before I get to that, let's talk about the managers. How are they presented?
Black suit.
They're dressed in suits.
Party establishment.
Okay.
Righteously indignant.
Okay. Let's talk about signs again. They're in suits. Not what they mean necessarily, but just suits, white, sighing, and visibly
embarrassed.
Yeah, embarrassed. Uh-huh.
But the thing is, not embarrassed for him. Embarrassed because of the public image.
Yeah. Image.
And that's a very good point that he even said image. Mm-hmm. This is not the image we want to portray.
Yeah. Right. That's right. So you've got order and chaos. On a national level, an international level, order is provided by the G8, if you will, wealthy nations, Western world. And chaos is provided by Africa and by the Southern Hemisphere, except for Australia. And chaos in a local level is provided by poor people, by minorities, by youth, by disasters. I didn't show you on this, but there are several fires and that kind of thing going on in this network show. And order is being provided by owners, managers, and educated people.
You also bring back the age thing. You said the average age is 57, and management in this case is definitely older than the sports players.
Mm-hmm.
This is an interesting twist, though, to this story that those of you who aren't from this local area might not know. Paul Allen owns this basketball team.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Allen is an old hippie.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is that Paul Allen to this day, and again, I don't want to start any rumors, but I'll bet you he still smokes pot.
Interesting. That's fascinating.
Yeah. Paul, I mean, the guy, he started the Jimi Hendrix Museum in Seattle. I mean,
that's such a riot.
And so it's, he's got his managers out there in suits. I've never seen a picture of Paul Allen in a suit. Never.
Yeah. So that's interesting. But let's talk about how the news is presented itself, and generally speaking, how news is presented. Is it, do they present a lot of statistics, or is it personal testimony? That is to say, is it anecdotal, or is it, do they look at the broad picture on a societal level?
The more anecdotal they can make it, the more impact it will have the story. Mm-hmm.
Okay, why?
Because we identify with it. We can identify, it's much easier to identify with hearing somebody's, you know, like somebody's journey from the subway in, with the power outage last week, you know, the subway in New York, getting above ground and walking across a bridge and things like that. That saga is much more readily identified with than saying so many thousand people were trapped in the subway and it took them so many minutes to get above ground and some of them had to walk between 1 and 5 miles. I mean, that's just, you know, it's fact, it's dry, it doesn't touch you. It provides you with the information.
Yeah.
And it provides you with a much broader picture of what really happened. But it does not, you know, I can turn it off much more easily in the middle of that fact than I can in the middle of somebody's anecdotal response.
Yeah.
And I would suggest that that's one thing that local television news does very well.
Quite.
It does tell a story through a personal level.
Yeah.
And it can do that really well.
Yeah. Anecdotal evidence for most people is very persuasive. Much more so than if you put out a bunch of statistics on a societal level and try to put this into perspective with all of the rest of what's going on in culture and society. It's much more persuasive, and it fits into a short segment. You can't present the broad picture. You can't go into the nuance and the complexity of how this particular story fits in with the wider culture and society. You can't do that. You've got a very short time. 10 minutes is pretty short. To come up with all of that. Issues are, in general, and on the news, treated individually rather than in their systemic relationships with the rest of culture and society, with the possible exception of the McNeil News Hour, which does help you to relate it to whatever is going on in culture. I mean, is that what you'd say, you who watch the Lear News Hour?
They tell more of a complete story. They only pick, though, about 4 stories
right.
on the national level, I mean. But they get into depth with them, I'd say, to tell a more complete picture.
And so I would say, from a print media standpoint, the local news is very, or at a more of a national level, USA Today. I mean, I read the little flip on the front page, and I'm looking for the continuation so I can find out what really happened, and there's nothing there. That's it.
Yeah.
And there's no depth.
So while this half an hour, 25 and a half minutes, has 12 stories in it, we get snippets. Actually, it has 12 stories in it, but 2 of those stories take up 10 minutes. So in 14 and a half minutes, 15 and a half minutes, you've got 10 stories. And how much time can you devote? How much nuance can you get in all that time? Okay, let's think about how that happens. So the news is kind of fragmented. You get a picture, you get a snapshot, you don't really understand how it fits into the rest of culture and society. Stories come and go, appearing, and this is a quote by James Phallos, who wrote a book called Breaking the News. Stories come and go, appearing without explanation and disappearing without resolution. The message of today's news coverage is often that the world cannot be understood, shaped, or controlled, but merely endured. What is your sense after you watch this news program? Is it something that you can do something about? Is it something that helps you in your life? Does it inform you, or does it persuade you to take action? What is your reaction to the show?
Waste of time. So then I have no desire to watch 11 o'clock and then try to go to sleep.
This was the 11 o'clock.
I have no desire to wait, I know, and I have no desire to watch it. It's, if anything, it's troubling. at the helplessness and at the what's messed up.
So you feel helpless at the end?
Something like that.
Do you think you could dream of bad dreams? Or maybe it's not?
Maybe not dreams at all. I mean, you know. Yeah.
Well, I hear what you're saying, and I don't watch it either.
Yeah.
So I'm in agreement with you. But, you know, if we artificially put together a newscast of just good news, that, I don't know if that would make us feel any better.
No.
You know, I mean, there's that whole don't blame the messenger thing.
No.
I mean, if the world is messed up, we do need to know about it, because we can't take action if we don't know.
No.
But again, I get back to the trust. You know, do we trust our news outlets? And I don't know that I do. And even newspapers. I mean, I think it's really wise for everyone to look at a wide variety of different news organizations and pick and choose from many points of view to come to your own opinion of what's real.
Well, they've done polls on the accuracy of the news, and the percentage is very low of the people that watch it, or maybe it's just the overall public. It's way under 50%. They don't consider that accurate. It's not accurate.
I don't think the truth comes out of the news at all. I spent 2 years in Vietnam. I know of major battles reported that never took place, and I know of major battles that were never reported. And subsequently, I started taking the tact of finding people who were involved in particular areas where reporting was going on. And I work with people from India, from Communist China, from the Middle East, and I talk to them. I find out what their view of what is going on is. I no longer believe that there is any truth available through the news media.
How about the internet? Do you use the internet much to get information?
I use the internet for research, but not for news.
But not for news?
I listen to NPR,
right.
But then I go and I discuss what I've heard on NPR with people from the various places that I know of where things are being reported, to see what their perspective on it is.
What do you think about the accuracy of like BBC or something like that, one of the European news outlets?
It's certainly a different perspective.
Yeah.
I don't think that it is particularly more conducive to understanding our world than, but it is a different perspective.
Yeah.
Well, I think in general, people aren't stupid in this country. They don't accept that news is presented with any sense of objectivity anymore. I think we've gone beyond that. They know that there's a bias, and so reporters try to present balance. And you see it in this show as well, that balance means two perspectives, when in fact, news is a variety of different perspectives. But because you only have a certain number of minutes to present it, you have this side and this side. So we have bias going on in news as a cloaked form of objectivity. Balance is being presented between two sides rather than a multifaceted issue. And let me just make a disclaimer. I have an hour to present this, and I am giving you my bias. And so you know that what I'm telling you is not necessarily the truth or gospel. You wouldn't think so anyway, because you're thinking human beings. But I just want to disclaim for you that this is my perspective, and it's one perspective. Now, what if a news anchor said that to you? What if they said, we are about to give you a biased form of news, it's our perspective, we try to present two sides of the stories, and you make up your own mind. Would you think you'd ever hear that?
Yes, you hear that now in the financial, where they have to do the disclosure on the financial networks.
Okay, you do.
And they say, you know, the analyst will say he either does or does not have a position in the security that they're going to talk about. And Paul Harvey, you have to display like that. That too.
He does, Paul Harvey does.
Yeah, this is his opinion.
Yeah, but I mean, that, and it's, I guess, I mean, they legally have to tell you now if there are financial people in there, whether they have a position in that stock or in that type of, I mean, some of them can tell you if they have a position in the industry. And it's, you can gauge the objectivity by it.
Right.
Yeah, so I find it helpful.
It is helpful, if people hear it. But I often wonder if people are watching the news expecting it to be news, or if people watch the news expecting it to be news entertainment, infotainment, if you will. And if they watch it, there's nothing wrong with news. It's great. Watch it. But watch it as entertainment, or watch it as a dramatic art form that has a kernel of truth in it, that has some information that's helpful. News may not tell us what to think, but it certainly does tell us what to think about certain things.
Our TV station has what they call a reality check. I don't know if you've seen that or not, but that's supposed to be the truth. Well, this is as objective as possible. Now, how, I don't know, maybe reality check needs a reality check. But.
Well, I don't know, what is that?
Well, it's the strangest, you know, they'll say, they'll take, for example, our Indian community ran commercials for, our legislature was going to pass a law where we would have gambling outside of the Indian casinos, and so they were running commercials against us. So they did a reality check on those commercials, and they take a segment, run a segment, and they'd say, well, this is fact. There are so many, you know, back up that. Then he'd take the next segment, well, this is questionable. And that's WCCO in Minneapolis that does that. I don't know if that's to, it's to add credibility to their reporting.
The Channel 5 does that too, from Seattle, I've seen. There's an Oriental guy that comes on and does something like that there.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, I tune in to, like I said, just for quick, review of see what happens overnight. I check with Fox News on my computer. And I think it's because they're really fast with news stories. Mm. But they're very biased. But they say, there's a counter reaction to the fact that this is dumbed down and sensationalism and, you know, compared to what they talked about in the news, like you said, back in the 50s or 60s, where people could think about international situations, to being spoon-fed this kind of emotional stuff, not thinking, but emotional. They're appealing to your emotions, mm-hmm. You know, and they're dumbing the stories down to spoon-feed it to people or something. But Fox makes a comment that they're balanced news. And one time I saw that one of the guys interviewing Al Gore, and he said, he was making a statement about this fact, and Al Gore said, well, this is primarily a conservative news station. And the guy said, oh, no, we do balanced news here. Hmm. And he kind of looked at him like, are you kind of stupid? So
balance in our terminology, and I think our day and age means you got two sides of the story. Again, the template of today is chaos versus order, good versus evil. I mean, can you imagine a story being told on the news that doesn't have that kind of set up this kind of either or option? Maybe look for it. I challenge you to look for it.
Well, you know what? It actually does happen.
Okay.
I mean, it happens.
In human interest stories, perhaps.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, of course, I can't come up with a good example.
You're putting on a firework.
Well, yeah. I mean, a story about a group of people that are trying to save a wetland or whatever. I mean, there is that stuff. There really is, and truly is. But it's maybe not be. It's not the top story, and it may not be as emotional or as this. So we sort of have this sense that it's all just crummy bad news, murders, you know, the bad guys, whatever. But, I mean, there truly is that other stuff, but it's not quite as fun, so it doesn't get top billing.
Well, so many of the issues that really should be examined are so ignored, washed over, that it is just amazing. Take, for example, what percentage of the people that were killed on the 9/11 attack, what percentage of them were U.S. citizens? Was that an attack against the United States? Has anybody ever discussed that? I found out from my Indian friend that 40% of the people killed there were citizens of India. I wonder how many of them actually were citizens of the United States. And why and how is this being manipulated to try to tell us that this is an excuse to go to war against Hussein, who certainly is a bad guy, but you know, there's no plausible line of events that you could say that he caused that. It's just, you know. But you know, the things that are really important to us right now, they're not going to be discussed in the news.
Now, a little bit of the problem we're having in this discussion is that you have shown us a clip of the 11 o'clock local Portland, Oregon news, and you're talking, you know, major, you know, international stuff. So we're kind of a little bit comparing apples and oranges here.
Portland news, the 10 o'clock news on Fox, about... 75% of the time, the lead story is which sexual predator was let loose in which part of town this week.
So let me just say, for our viewing and hearing audience, that we're actually at the end of our time. And if you want to continue this conversation, by all means do. But I'm going to just give you an out if you need to go someplace or if you need to now turn off the CD player.
Do.
Thanks. Okay. You may continue to talk, but actually, that's... The local and the national, they would contend in this book, is just two of the same argument playing itself out. We've got chaos versus order, both in the national news scene. You've got the wealthy nations and the poor nations. You've got the owners versus the players, if you will, going on in the local scene. So it's the same narrative, storyline, playing itself out, whether you're talking about national news or talking about local news.
See, I have one question. Something that now I've noticed it in my own family. I have three kids married. They're all three professionals, and they don't watch the news. Is that a trend among young
yes.
people?
Yes, it
yes.
is.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
When you watch the news, who's advertising?
Yeah.
It's all pharmaceuticals.
Yeah.
For. Yeah. Acid reflux and heart and high blood pressure.
That's right, because I get so upset with my kids. Don't you realize what's happening? No, I don't watch that. They know they're busy with their lives. But
this book has statistical information over time that documents the fact that news readership, listenership, and watchership has declined over time. That
even TV,
television, yes. network news, that national and local all. Have the watcher age is steadily rising, and that younger people are not paying attention to the news as much as they used to.
It used to be that, at least they used to tell you that TV news wouldn't really give you any details. I mean, TV news folks themselves would tell you that you should read, get background on that, like if there's an earthquake or something, you have to watch it. You shouldn't watch TV news, it's rubbish. I mean, if you read something or you read the paper, then you can get some kind of background.
Yeah.
Well, my mother was in a strike at the UW, and I mean, all that it was that there on the news, there's some people walking around. I mean, they could tell us why they're on strike and what some of the issues are.
I was walking in that strike, and they interviewed me.
Uh-huh.
Oh, boy.
Did you see me on the news?
See, that's where you advised.
What did you say?
Did you explain the strike?
I explained why I was on strike.
See, now I'm thinking WCCO would interview you, probably KSTP wouldn't, because I think WCCO is much more on the liberal side. So you get two different views, you
believe. Yeah, I don't know.
But
you should watch the night.
It's all entertainment now. It's all news about movies. Sports movies.
If you understand that, that's a perfectly good form of entertainment.
Well, yeah, I know it. I've caught that.
Right.
And
Every time I watch it, I see somebody down there, I know.
Tomorrow, we'll watch ER.